Now, from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host, Tony Smith, and CBSSports.com's Pete Prisco.
There we go. Tyler putting in the work, making sure everybody's name always in the open there. It's Pete Prisco joining me today for the show. So 2 hours of some hardcore football talk. We talk football every day, but Pete probably thinks we're going to go deeper today than we do on any other average day, because I know how your brain works, Pete.
And I listen to you guys.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because I usually go get a workout in, and I ride my bike to UNF, and I go run my get my track workout at UNF, and I have you guys on.
And how often are you calling myself or Mike an idiot while you're listening?
Plenty of time.
Okay.
Usually when O'Halloran's on.
I would expect nothing
less.
You're
not the only one, Pete.
No, obviously not the only one, as we get that a lot from our listeners out there.
I love Ryan. I love giving him crap, too.
I do, too. I enjoy Ryan, and it's funny. I always tease him. I assume that he likes Mike and I, but I don't know, right? Like, he comes in and he does a show with Mike and I once a week, but that doesn't mean that he necessarily likes us, but I assume he does.
At Captain Sunshine, he's not.
Yeah, I know he doesn't like anybody else in the media except maybe Hayes. I've never asked him about you, so I don't know how he feels about you.
Hayes is his little guy.
Yeah.
He's Ryan Green. He likes Ryan Green.
Remember, he likes Hacker.
Remember when Penny Hardaway had little Penny?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's Hayes' little Ryan.
There's no doubt about it. A ton, obviously, to get into today, Pete. We haven't had a chance to really talk to you. We had you in for a couple minutes during one of the OTAs coming off the field, talking a little bit about Blake Bortles, who we can obviously talk much more in depth about today, as we have less than 4 weeks basically until training camp's going to get started for the Jaguars. So it's here basically, but we haven't had the opportunity to talk to you all off season. So we'll talk about the offensive line, and obviously today with the passing of Buddy Ryan. I mean, that's a gigantic name in the defensive history of the National Football League. So the fan feedback question of the day today, we're asking fans out there, who's the greatest defensive coordinator in NFL history in honor of the passing of Buddy Ryan? And I think there are some very good answers to that question. And it doesn't necessarily just have to be Buddy, but we'll talk about some of the stories you have about Buddy Ryan. I know from the outside looking in, I could see the contentious relationship that he had with Mike Ditka during that run with the 85 Bears. I don't know if there's ever been anybody on the defensive side of the ball that hated offense more than Buddy Ryan did. When everything was just hated everyone that was on that side of the ball and wanted to punish them for having chosen that profession. That's the way it came off.
Yeah, and that's the way it was. I mean, that's who he was. But what I loved about Buddy Ryan is he played defense like he was an offensive coach. He attacked. He wasn't scared. You know, zero coverage is something that few teams were doing back in those days.
Right.
And he would do it. He'd unload the blitz. And, you know, eventually you got away from the two-back offense, and everybody went to the one-back and the three receivers and got the ball out and started, you know, like Marino did against him and when they beat them in Miami that year, mm-hmm. their only loss of the season. You get the ball out, boom, 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 and teams started doing that, so he had to evolve. Now, his sons haven't exactly evolved, and that, like, you know, Rob Ryan, all-out blitzes and exotic schemes and everything, he gets caught out of position in New Orleans. But at the time, it was so revolutionary, and they were built perfectly for it. You know what thing, Tony? I always ask this question. Everybody remembers the 85 Bears. Well, they were better the next year in 86, but they didn't win it. But in 85, everybody always, you remember Singletary and Dent and Otis Wilson and Wilbur Marshall and Fensick and Plank. Nobody ever remembers the corners. And the reason they don't remember the corners is because it didn't really matter who was playing corners because they got so much pressure.
Sure. And I think Leslie Frazier, wasn't he on that team?
He was, and he got hurt. And Mike Richardson, L.A. Mike, who went to Arizona State and was actually a safety in college, played one of the corners. And then Reggie Phillips was another one who played. But those were the corners, and nobody remembers who they were.
And really, that, you know, what you're talking about there with the bringing in of the one-back set, three wide receiver sets coming into football around that kind of time, and that's the history of pro football, right, is somebody comes up with an innovation because of what's happening on one side of the ball or the other, and now everyone has to react to it. And that's kind of been, you know, the history of football, and the 46 defense was, again, a reaction to, okay, if everyone's going to play offense this way, then this is how we can beat that, and this is how we can punish teams for continuing to do that. So the Bears came up with the 46 defense, named after Plank, the safety on that team, and it revolutionized what was happening on that side of the ball and forced offensive minds to change the way they approached it, and really has opened up the game as much as it has today.
Well, and it did it in different ways. Like the Redskins did it with the move tight end. they came when Buddy was in Philadelphia. They had the move tight end, and the move tight end would help offset. You still were in one back, but it was the tight end who was involved. Then the three receivers came into play. It's like with the Blitzburg, the 3-4 Blitzburg scheme. Ball started coming out, and teams started, you know, challenging them. The linebackers would be in coverage, and the defensive linemen would drop into coverage. You get a guy. So everybody evolves into something. It's like this cover three that Seattle has won with and Jacksonville has won with. Well, teams are catching up to that, as used. The teams are catching up with that, too. So you got to continually evolve the game.
And it's an old scheme. It just became new again. You know, that kind of cover three idea. It's something that they were doing in the NFL forever. And then it kind of went away because you went to cover two because Carson brought in the cover two. Then the 46 defense got hot. Then that zone blitz scheme got hot with what Dick LeBeau was doing in Pittsburgh. And then it comes back around to, all right, if offenses are going to do this, let's try this again. And the cover three happened to work really well. Maybe it's just because of the personnel they had.
Well, a cover two kind of went away. And for, you know, the Tampa two, not cover two, but the Tampa two, where you drop the middle linebacker into the middle because teams started running the crossers into the middle. And so every defense comes up and it has some success or an offense. And then teams are so smart, coaches are so smart that they evolve and they eventually figure it out.
Yeah. And it's interesting. I read, Ron Jaworski's book. He did the Seven Sundays That Changed the Game, came out a handful of years ago. I read it a couple weeks ago, and it was four out of the seven were on defense. It was the Air Coryell offense, it was the West Coast offense, and I think it was Sid Gilman were the three offensive things that he looked at in that book. But it was the cover two with Carson, it was the 46 defense, it was the Blitzburg, and it was, he called it the bullseye plan for Bill Belichick in the Super Bowl against the Rams, where they basically ignored hitting Kurt Warner and focused in on hitting Marshall Faulk throughout that entire game to
take
give themselves an advantage.
Right, take away Faulk, and you could beat the Rams. Yeah. That's what they thought. It worked.
Yeah, that's the bullseye game plan with that. But we got a lot more to talk about, obviously, with Buddy Ryan and some of the stories about Buddy. We haven't even mentioned Gilbride yet. And of course,
Gilbride would have beat his butt, by the way. I hope people out there realize that. You know, everybody always thought Buddy was the curmudgeon. Kevin Gilbride was a bit, and he was the coach here, and I've known Kevin for years.
Sure.
Kevin was a big man. Kevin would have given him a beating.
Did you ever ask him about that?
Oh, yeah. Many a time.
Right.
And believe me, in Kevin's mind, he thought he would have given him a beating.
We'll get into that. We'll get into a lot of Jaguars talk today as well. Offensive line first up on the list. I know Pete's anxious to talk about this a little bit, so we'll get into it. Pete Prisco joining me here. Mike Dempsey's still on vacation. He'll be back on Thursday, so it's almost done. Heck, he may have a flight back today. For all I know,
angry guy then.
Just taking
the vacation, angry guy.
Oh, we'll see what we get with Mike when he gets back in studio on Thursday. I think John Osher going to join me for the show tomorrow. But today we got Pete Prisco alongside as we get things rolling here on a Tuesday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010 XL.
This is Jaguars Today from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field. The games, the practices, the press conferences.
The crowd was unbelievable. They were involved the whole game.
Home of the Jaguars. 1010 XL, 92.5 FM. Now more Jaguars Today on 1010 XL, 92.5 FM.
It is Jaguars Today. Mike Dempsey on vacation for another couple of days. He'll be back on Thursday with us. You got me, Fat Tony, Pete Prisco alongside as we'll get into some Jaguars talk. Obviously, the big NFL news today, the passing of Buddy Ryan, the former Chicago Bears defensive coordinator, Philadelphia Eagles head coach, Cardinals head coach, and I think he was the Oilers coordinator for a year, defensive coordinator for a year. Buddy Ryan passes away today at the age of 82. Obviously, both sons, Rob and Rex, still coaching in the NFL ranks and actually on the same staff together now up there at Buffalo with the Bills, with Rex the head coach, Rob the defensive coordinator now for the Buffalo Bills. But the passing of Buddy Ryan, one of the great defensive minds in NFL history, creator of that 46 defense there with the Chicago Bears, and what a lot of people think may be the best single season in NFL history with that 85 Bears team and what they were able to accomplish. And you go back and look at some of the numbers they had, especially on the defensive side of the ball, it's pretty staggering what they were able to do to stifle NFL offenses for that season.
Yeah, and the way they did it. I mean, they put fear in the opposition. I mean, they were sensational at getting after the quarterback. And, you know, we talk about the get after the quarterback era now because everybody throws the football around, but they got after. I mean, Richard Dent was phenomenal as a pass rusher, as the right end. I mean, Dan Hampton on the inside was a phenomenal player. You know, they're Hall of Famers. Steve McMichael was a rugged inside player, but then they were so athletic at linebacker with, you know, Wilbur Marshall, who every Gator fan in the world knows, and Otis Wilson and Singletary. And, you know, and the secondary was kind of they were appendages almost. I mean, they weren't great in the secondary. They were just solid. You know, Fencek was smart, and then they have Dave Durson, who was a good football player. But you look back at the corners, they were just average corners, and they got after the quarterback. I mean, I can remember the run. I was a Giants fan, and I remember the Giants played him in the playoffs that year, and they beat the daylights out of Phil Simms. Just beat him up.
Oh, yeah. I've heard Phil interview talking about the 46 defense, and it's like he still has nightmares about trying to prepare for that. And when the Bears were the only team in the league doing those things, then it's that much more difficult to prepare for it because you're not getting used to it every week. It's not like you're playing, you know, five cover two defenses, and you're like, okay, this is what we kind of do against the cover two or whatever. It's, oh, here comes that 46. How do we even attack this thing? And it was special. I mean, what the Bears were able to do was special.
That's the greatness of Marino. I'm a big Marino.
I know
Marino is the most underappreciated quarterback that's ever played the game because he didn't win a Super Bowl. But what he did to that Bears defense, I mean, my gosh, he lit them up, got the ball out. I mean, it was sensational. And I'm a big Dan Marino guy, and I remember that. It was a huge game. I mean, it was a Monday night game. It was all, you know, anybody talked about, and Marino lit them up, and that's the only loss they had. And you go back and look at their numbers in the postseason, they killed the Giants, and I forget what the score was. I think they shut the Giants out. But then the Rams were the team they played in the championship game, I think, that year, and they just, I think they shut them out. I mean, they just were so, so dominant.
Yeah, they might have. I know for the book that Jaworski wrote talking about the 46 defense, he always picked one game. The game he picked that year was the Dallas game because for Ditka, it was this, okay, we got to take down the Cowboys. It was a big deal for Mike Ditka to go back to Dallas and win that kind of game against a team that really had been dominating the NFC for a while. And it was, he called it a massacre, what they did defensively to that Dallas team. And it was, Buddy Ryan never, he just didn't have it in him to cruise at any point in a football game. He was going to punish you and punish you and punish you. And it was that idea of, if you can't stop it, then I'm not going to stop doing it.
Well,
and
he hated quarterbacks.
He thought they were
elitist, and he wanted them pampered and babied and everything else. And
he's not wrong.
No, he wanted a brutal. Yeah, but the way the game is played now, you better have one. But I don't care how good your defense is. They wanted to brutalize them. I mean, they wanted to brutalize the quarterback, and they did. They were, I mean, again, you can see, if you remember the era, and I know there's a lot of guys out there that do, you remember there were a lot of times where there were guys getting hit, and there were other Bear players leaving their feet to blast them in a different spot. I mean, it was brutal. It was a brutal game back then. And I bring that up because I was out in Arizona doing a story with offensive linemen recently, and in March, actually, but it ran in April, I think. But I sat down with four offensive linemen, Kyle Long, whose father played in the NFL, Bobby Massey, Chance Wormack, and Weston Richburg, the Giants center. And when we sat down, the whole gist of the thing was offensive linemen have taken a beating in the National Football League this year. And when we got through the talking about it, they all brought up, they said, we were watching tape of the Cowboys in the 80s and 90s, you know, the good lines.
Yeah.
Recently. And we noticed how brutal the game was, how violent the game was. And these are offensive linemen talking about it. So after we got done with our chat, we sat down and I was at LaCharles Bentley's place. They put up a tape. And we watched the Cowboys against the Packers. So it was Reggie White going against Eric Williams in a lot of situations. And a great couple things stood out from that, Tony. Think about this. This is in the 90s. This is 20 years ago. The simplicity of the game was incredible. You came to the line of scrimmage. There was no pre-snap movement. The quarterback came up, snapped the ball, boom, off you went. Okay? It was very, all the coverages were simple. There was nothing exotic. So it was easy to read and decipher. It wasn't a crazy game then. But the brutality of it, guys taking shots after the whistle. You know, now everybody's, you know, is so sensitive to that stuff, and you get flagged, you get fined, you get everything. And in the line play, brutality, throwing guys to the ground, guys on top of each other. The game has changed from that standpoint, but it's also become much more complicated in terms of what they do on the field.
Yeah, and maybe that played into what the 46 defense was. You know, before offenses were willing to move around and show something and then go to something else, I know it was a read-and-react defense where they watched that offensive formation, the way they lined up, and said, this is our play. based on what they're doing, and there was just nobody else that was doing that kind of thing defensively in the league, and put them in a position where they were the aggressors, and the offense was put on its heels, and you could almost see the quarterbacks. I know, going back to Phil Simms and those guys, I mean, it was, you could see them going, they got us on this play. Like, well, before the snap, they got us on
right,
this play.
And zero coverage, there's nobody in the middle of the field. Nowadays, you see that. You come to the line of scrimmage, you check to, you know, you bring guys in and get to a max protect and throw a hot route into the middle of the field, and guys going 70 yards.
Yeah.
Well, back then, they didn't do that. And they didn't, so the Bears were, they had a leg up on everybody because there was no reaction. The game was, it's become a thinking man's game now. The NFL is exotic looks. You do this, you show me that, I'll show you this, I'll move here, you go here. That's why you see so many times, Tony, the play clock going down in the NFL nowadays. Back then, they'd come to the line of scrimmage and snap the ball. It was such a simple game.
Yeah. And it's obviously changed. And you are right. I mean, just the way that it's evolved in 20 years. And you go back and read about the history of the game. I was reading last night, you know, when they basically put in the rule where when a player touches the ground, they're down, as opposed to forward progress being stopped. And I'm like, can you imagine today's NFL where it was just about you have to completely stop this guy from moving? Like, that's the definition of down, and just how brutal and just devastating that game would be. And to think that that's the way they used to play this game.
Well, here's one. You know, the old, you know, kneel down. The victory formation. Everybody brutalizes the Giants because they didn't run, you know, because of the Bisarchik fumble back in the day.
Miracle.
There was no kneel down back then. It wasn't put into play until 87 or whatever it was. So you couldn't, a quarterback had to be touched down back then. So what happened was, is the Giants ran a play and Bisarchik took a knee, but, you know, kind of dove down, but he wasn't down. So the Eagles blasted the offensive lineman. And Bill Bergey and Frank LeMaster, they blasted him. So the Giants got mad, and they ran a play to Zonk, and he got 11 yards. Well, then they decided to run the exact same play instead of, you know, falling down, or they should have fallen on the ball. By the way, great story about that, because I actually might write this someday. The guy who called the play was fired that night. He ended up, he never coached again, never called another play again in his life.
Really?
Ever.
Who was that?
His name was Bob Gibson. He ended up running a bait and tackle shop in Sanibel Island, I think, and he just recently died. Never talked about it, never ran another play again.
Wow.
Fired him that night. Goodbye.
I mean, I'm not surprised that he got fired, but
never
get
again.
The opportunity again.
Never.
With the way that the NFL business works, the just repeat after repeat
right.
after repeat.
They recycle everybody.
That you wouldn't eventually just say, all right, let's give this guy another chance.
Right.
That's crazy. That is crazy. Among some of the other names in NFL history on the defensive side of the ball, obviously Dick LeBeau comes to
mind.
One
of the greats.
Monty Kiffin, who's being honored actually here in Jacksonville this year, obviously as an assistant, but Monty Kiffin in that Tampa too, and what they did down there is crazy, just the way that it dominated the league for a short time, but you still see elements of it. And again, it's a different game than it was. You're not going to wait around to adjust to these things the way that they used to. And so when teams come out and do something innovative, then you're immediately trying to find some way to find an answer to it. And that's just not the way the NFL has always
been. Bud Carson's name on that list?
He should be.
Yeah, another
cover
one.
Two. Yeah. Absolutely.
Another great defensive coach. Hey, I'll give you one. Wade Phillips has been a hell of a coach.
No doubt.
I mean, he just got honored with Monty Kiffin, too, for the Dr. Z Award. But another great, great coach. I mean, look, there's been a lot of really good defensive coaches. One thing about Buddy Ryan was the defensive line coach of the Jets when they won the Super Bowl against the Colts, and they got after Earl Morrill in that game, and the upset and Joe Namath's guarantee and all that.
Yeah, speaking of the Colts, and we'll get into the Jags here in just a second, but speaking of the Colts and just the way the game has changed, I was saw something on Unitas last night, and Raymond Berry is tight end, and both of them Hall of Famers.
No, receiver.
Oh, yeah, sorry, Berry. But they used to have, they were like the first in the NFL to have a check.
Yeah.
When they saw the, like, it, Unitas would just kind of like rub his belly or whatever, and they knew, okay, it's a slant on this route. And it was like the first time the NFL had seen anything like that. Unitas was calling the plays at the line of scrimmage, which quarterbacks didn't do back in the day all that much. And it was just the baby steps the NFL was taking and watching everyone else in the NFL try to figure out what to do about this guy who just didn't run plays when you thought you should run that play, and it's part of what made Unitas great, and obviously Barry, both those guys in the Hall of Fame now.
Unitas would have been great in any era, by the way. I mean, the man could throw the football, he could read defenses, he was fantastic. You know, it's so funny you mentioned about checking off and every plays. They used to send plays in with the messenger guard.
Yep.
the guard would send the play in. You know, I mean, it was, so think about that. You take a guard out, you put a guard in, you take a guard out, you put a guard in to send in the play. How stupid is that? Now, when you look back on it, it's really stupid, but that's how they used to do it.
Well, they used to limit substitutions.
Yeah.
It used to not be an unlimited thing, just put whoever on the field you want to. It used to be, you know, you can only change one guy or whatever, which it's crazy. Just the way that the game has changed. And really, it's still a relatively young league compared to some of the other leagues. But obviously, it's changed a lot, especially in the last 20 years.
I love the way the game has changed. I really do. And I said,
bet you do.
I told John Osher this. He'll vouch for this. Back in the 90s when we were covering the Jaguars, I said, you know what's going to happen to this league? The big corner is going to become the free safety. The free safety is going to become the strong safety. The strong safety is going to become the outside linebacker. The outside linebacker is going to become put his hand on the ground and become a pass rusher. The big pass rusher is going to go inside on third down and become a pass rusher because the game is going to be spread out. And that's exactly what's happened. The hybrid player, Miles Jack, and I told him this, Miles Jack came around 20 years ago. He wasn't going to be the player he is today. And he said, he goes, I'm fortunate. I was born at the right time because Miles Jack is the perfect hybrid player for the way the game is played now.
No doubt about it. Him and Telvin Smith may be ideal for what you want out of linebackers in today's NFL game, just with, like you said, how spread out it is. We'll talk about the Jaguars' offensive line here in just a moment. I know you're dying, too, with what's going to happen with especially that left side. I think we all know pretty much center, right guard, right tackle, what it's going to look like for this Jaguars team, but the big questions on that left side of the offensive line, how do we think they're going to fall into place when everything is said and done? Pete Prisco of CBS Sports alongside, talking a little Jaguars football next here on a Tuesday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
I'm Dan Scuda of your Jacksonville Jaguars, and you're listening to Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Tyler.
Might want to rework that one.
Tyler.
Should I have laid off that one there?
No, it's fine. I wasn't prepared for it. I was not prepared. Fat Tony here with you. Pete Prisco alongside Dan Scuda there with the liner. We talked to him out of the Super Bowl when he recorded that for us. And
I hope his story is correct. I hope this didn't happen. Obviously.
I do too. Look, he's obviously something's going on. He got hit somewhere because he's got that shiner under his eye.
Yeah, somebody gave him a pop.
Yeah. At some point in time, something happened. So maybe his side of the story is more credible. Look, we'll wait to see how the details of this thing work itself out. But, you know, it was when I was getting off yesterday, really didn't know any of the details except he had been arrested and it had happened on June 19th. It was a bar altercation. Didn't know a woman was involved. Look, if her side of the story is correct, then he's done in Jacksonville. I mean,
you can't put your hands on a woman.
Yeah, he'll be done, and we'll see if he can find work somewhere else. And I'm not sure what the legal step in and do if this is technically domestic violence, which could mean a 6-game suspension, I guess, for the first offense now under the domestic violence policy in the NFL. But again, we're a long way off from knowing exactly how this thing is going to play out, and his side of the story came out late yesterday afternoon, basically his lawyer saying this is all made up. So the two stories couldn't be more opposite as far as outside that bar.
Well, now you get the witnesses and video and everything else and see what really happened. You know, look, that's another thing. If he did it, it's disgusting, yep, and he should pay the consequences. If he didn't do it and it's like a cash grab, that's disgusting too. So
yeah.
Look, if he did it, it's gross, disgusting, and he should pay the consequences, and the Jaguars should make him pay the consequences.
Absolutely. And the story will work itself out over the course of the next couple days, weeks, months,
whatever. It's the month where coaches hate
because
they don't have any control over their players. And it's summer, and it's hot, and guys are getting antsy. They've been working for, 4 months. You know, nobody ever says this, but the time between the end of the season and then the start of OTAs in March, nobody ever gets concerned about that time away. You ever notice that? But
yeah,
they always get concerned about the summer time away, which is less time away because they think, these guys have been working up until then. Nowadays, though, Tony, it used to be guys would break and go take some vacation and stuff. You noticed if you follow guys on Twitter, they're all working still.
Yeah.
Nobody's, because it would be stupid to get your body in football shape, take a month off, and then come to camp and not be in football shape. So these guys all continue to work out and go to those, facilities where they can work out.
Yeah, and it feels like they may take a week. You know, of the five and a half weeks that they have in here, they may take a week to go do whatever they want to do, and then it's back to work and doing whatever they can do to get ready. And in today's NFL game, you almost have to, right? Not only because of the shape you need to stay in, but like you said a few moments ago, the mental side of the game has become so important, and it changes so fast on the fly on the field that you have to prepare yourself for that. And I don't know if you can take, you know, 2 months off in an off season and be mentally prepared for what you have to deal with when you get to an NFL season.
If I was a player, what I would do is I'd take long weekends. I'd continue to grind. You know, you do have to rest your body now.
Sure.
I mean, because that's one of the theories out there is why you see a lot more injuries and pulls and tweaks and that kind of thing is because the body isn't rested like it used to be. Now, back in the day, the guys were pigs and they used to, you know, not work out the entire off season. They'd smoke and everything else and they'd show up and steak a stogie and a couple beers after a game. They played six preseason games and they used training camp to get in shape. Well, these guys are all in shape, but you still got to be careful that you don't push too much. Because your body does need to get some rest.
Yeah, so long weekend where you'd work, what, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, maybe take a four-day weekend?
Yeah, and you
like
get
that.
Away from it and come back and grind again and then get back into it. And as you get closer to camp, then you start kind of pushing your way and maybe ease back on the – you don't work double days or anything like that.
No.
Camp is easy now, by the way. Let me just say that.
Compared to what it was,
It used to be brutal. It used to be – you know, hit on the morning, hit in the evening. You know, now these guys, if they hit, they go 2 days without hitting again. I mean, it's just, and they don't really hit. It's camp is, sorry, and I might sound like an old man when I say this, like, you know, like our dad used to say, I used to walk 4 miles to school. No, you didn't,
in
Dad.
The snow.
You're a liar. You're
uphill,
a liar.
Both
you lied.
Ways.
You lied. You hitched a ride.
Somehow.
But, I mean, the bottom line is camp is easy now. It really is. But it's also different. Guys don't get taught how to play the position anymore, Tony. Because it's all so compressed and it's all install that the techniques of the position aren't taught. That's why.
Are you talking any position or?
Almost all positions.
Okay.
But particularly the offensive line. That's why it's mind-numbing to me. Mind-numbing. And I don't know if it's happened because I haven't talked to him since then. That the left tackle on this team has not sought out the greatest left tackle I've seen since Anthony Munoz for advice on how to play the position.
When I heard that during all show that Monday, I was flabbergasted. Like, I was like, are you serious? Why would you not reach out to Tony Boselli of all people? This guy is potentially a Hall of Famer. I think in a lot of people's minds will eventually get that kind of honor. To not reach out to him at all is just crazy to me.
If I was a player, I'd pick the brain and get the work in of anybody I could get my hands on. If I was a coach, I'd go to as many – let's say this. If I was a high school coach, I'd go to as many clinics and coaching things as you can. You never stop learning in this game.
I mean, Cyprian has worked with Darius.
Right.
I mean, it just doesn't make any sense for Jokel not to work with Tony.
I'm sure Blake has talked to Brunell in the past sometime or another, right?
Yeah. I mean, you got to get better. Do anything you can to get better. And he hadn't reached out to him. I don't know if he still has because I haven't talked to Tony in a while. But I think that's something that needs to be done. And, again, I go back to the Offensive Line Academy in Arizona where Charles Bentley teaches guys.
Mm-hmm.
And they go there and they work. His deal is you're here for 13 weeks. You come, you don't leave. If you don't do the work, you're getting chucked out. And he threw out guys. There's guys that have been thrown out. But part of that is he teaches technique, his technique. So then you get back to the team, and these line coaches don't want to hear this, but as a group, they're pretty ornery people, offensive line coaches.
Sure.
If you go across the board in the history of this league, if you took one position, you said which line coaches are the most ornery, it would be the offensive line coaches. So they get back, and a guy like Joker will get back if he had gone out there, and Marone will say, no, you do it my way. Well, when push comes to shove, you want the guy to get the job done whatever way he can get it done.
Yeah.
And all those players that I talk to out there, they say when the light goes on, you do it whatever makes you comfortable, whatever gets the job done. And if the coach has a problem with it, then you get in the meeting room and you tell him, look, this is how I feel comfortable doing it. I got the job done. Get off my back.
And the questions for Luke Jokel since he got here, basically, and has been healthy enough to be on the field in the left tackle for this team have been he really struggles in space. And he really struggles with that speed rush around the edge. He just, when he gets put in that position, that's when that head goes down. All that technique seems to fail him. So I think the question that a lot of people have is, one, is he strong enough to play guard? And does playing guard kind of erase that space and make him that much better a player? I mean, there's still some questions about whether or not he's going to be the left tackle. But do you think that Luke Jokel would be a successful left guard?
I think he could play the position. I don't know if he's going to be an all-pro left guard, but he could play the, you know, there's a perception out there that he can't play the position. If you go back and watch some of his games against even a guy like J.J. Watt, when there wasn't space and he was just man up on him, he did some good things. Now, when he gets his problem, like Tony always says, when he gets his problems come when he ducks his head, when he tries to set, and he's not a powerful guy, so when he's trying to set, he's so concerned about it, he ducks his head and he allows the guy to bull rush him or go around him or whatever. That's a problem. Well, that wouldn't necessarily be a problem at left guard. However, I still think he has a chance to be the left tackle. I mean, in a world, you saw the Super Bowl last year. The left tackle for the Broncos wasn't very good. The left tackle was Michael Orr for the Carolina Panthers. Not very good. Mm-hmm. The right tackle was Mike Remmers. Not very good. The right tackle in Denver. Not very good. They weren't good at those positions. So is he terrible? No. Can he be middle of the pack? Yes. Can they win if he's middle of the pack? Sure they can. But they got to be better at a bunch of other things, including the quarterback. The quarterback's pre-snap reads. That, to me, is the next great step for Blake Bortles. Look, he's great improvising. He's fantastic outside the pocket. But when he comes to the line of scrimmage, how much better will he be in the pre-snap game? And what you saw out there this offseason, when you talk to the coaches, he's head and shoulders from where he was a year ago in the pre-snap
game. I want to talk about Blake with you, but while we're talking about that left tackle spot specifically here for a moment, looking at Beecham, what he did in Pittsburgh, was Beecham a better left tackle than Luke Jokel?
The last couple of years he's been, yeah.
Okay.
Before he got hurt, he was. Yes, absolutely. But Beecham is a grinder. He's a guy, a self-made player. You know, he's better than he looks. He's one of those players. You look at him, he's only 6'3", doesn't have the long frame, doesn't look like an offensive tackle, looks more like a guard. And he's kind of a self-made player. But you also got to remember, he plays with a quarterback like Blake, who moved around a lot and helped. You know, if he did get beat, it helped him. I think, ideally, they would like to see Jokel be the left tackle and Beecham be the left guard. Now, if it doesn't work out that way, and Beecham's the left tackle, then Jokel goes into left guard. Obviously, Jokel won't be here next year. If Jokel ends up being the left tackle and he's good, and then they're going to find a way to keep him. You watch. Everybody thinks he's gone out the window. They'll find a way to keep him.
See, my sense of it was the opposite, where my sense is that they want Beecham to be the left tackle and Jokel to be the left guard, is at least the sense that I get talking to him.
I think, ideally, they would, and you know what? In the work he did get at left guard from talking to people over there, he was pretty darn good in the work he got there when he was doing it this offseason.
And I think
times when people weren't out there and able to watch it.
And it does limit kind of the weaknesses that you see in Jokel's game. Since he got here, people have said that he's a really good run blocker. It's not like he's weak at the point of attack. His technique fails him. When he gets put on that
That's
island, his technique fails him. And watching him last year, where there were times when it's so obvious when it happens, when you're out there and the guy's just going to run by him and you can watch the replay and go, oh, there goes his head. Like, you just see it. If you know what you're looking for, you just see it and you're like, come on, man. Like, you've been doing this too long. You're too athletic. You're too gifted to allow that to get in your way of being successful at that position. And that's, I guess, the frustration probably even inside that building with Luke is you're too good to allow this to be the reason that it's not going to work for
you. If you look at Luke Jokel and you look at Kelvin Beecham, you say one's a left tackle and one's a left guard. I mean, they look like that.
Yeah,
that's what
Beecham
they look
looks like.
One's
guard.
More athletic, one's not. I mean, that's what they look like. So ideally, I think they'd like Luke to be the left tackle as a good left tackle. Now, that's debatable. Can it happen? But he was much better. Much better, they said this. Now, you know, everybody talks about everybody being better in the summer.
Sure.
It's great. The boys of summer, we've seen them all come around here over the years, the Curtis Marshes of the world and guys like that. They look great in the summer, and then they, you know, fade into oblivion. Chad Owens?
Chad Owens,
There's plenty of those guys. But I think there's a real chance he's the left tackle and Beecham's the left guard. Now, it could be the other way around, but I don't think it's going to be anybody but one of those two. I don't think it's going to be Bernadou. I really don't. I don't think it's going to be him.
I think it could be, but that's just the idea in my head of I can't convince myself that
you're
I think
the masses here. You can't convince yourself that Jokel's going to be a left guard.
That he's strong enough to be a left guard. I can't convince myself of that.
They're, believe me, I've talked to people down there, and there's a strong belief that he is plenty strong enough and plenty good enough to be a left guard.
I've heard the same things. And if you ask me who I think is going to be left guard, it's going to be whoever's not playing left tackle. Right. That's who I think is going to be the left guard. I can't in my own head wrap around the idea. What I've seen a Jokel saying, okay, that's a guard. I just, in my head, I can't get to that point.
It can be a good line, by the way.
It doesn't mean I'm right. I've been wrong plenty in my life.
And me too. But it can be a good line. I mean, you talk about, I think the right tackle will be better now that he's more comfortable with the right guard. You know, when you play with a rookie guard, sometimes you have a tendency to compensate for that rookie guard. Now they're meshing together. I think he'll be better. I thought he was pretty good last year, but he'll be better. I think Linder's going to be a terrific center.
I do too.
I mean,
to the point where he might be, you know, one of the better top two or three center, four centers in the league by the time this thing's done by the end of the year.
Yeah,
how good he could be.
I have no questions about Linder.
I mean, he's smart, he's tough, he's
spot.
Physical, he'll be fantastic there. And then, you know, then the left side is the question. But I think they're, you know, in a league where the line play is crappy, the offensive line play in the NFL is bad. You just have to be serviceable. And a lot of that goes back to the quarterback and his pre-snap reads.
No doubt about it. This state in football history, the Honda driver on the NFL coming up next. Then we'll get into a little bit about the quarterback Blake Bortles and exactly what you're talking about there, Pete, with those pre-snap reads and just why it's so crucial for him to take that kind of step and what that could potentially mean for this offense. But this state in football history, Honda driver on the NFL coming up next here on 1010XL.
And now, this date in football history.
This date in football history. Couple of interesting birthdays. No real events of note. Obviously, the passing of Buddy Ryan, the big news in the NFL today at the age of 82. So that'll be something that we're talking about on June 28, 2017 on this date in football history. But as of today, Marvin Jones, 44 years old today. Happy birthday, former Florida State Seminole.
Shaytree.
Fourth overall pick of the NFL draft and by the New York Jets in 93. Played his entire 10-year career there with the Jets. Started 129 games, including playing in all 16 games for the final 6 years of his career there with the New York Jets.
Much better college linebacker, by the way.
Yeah, and again, went fourth overall, I think. Was that the Bledsoe draft?
What year was it?
93? Was that Bledsoe and Meyer?
Yeah.
1-2, I think, in that
draft? I
think
it was.
I'm not sure. I know that's the Strahan draft was in the second round. I think Willie Rofe was in the fourth round of that draft.
Not the fourth round. He went in the first round.
Did he? I thought Rofe went late.
No, he went. I think he went the first.
Eighth overall, Willie Rofe.
Yeah. Willie Rofe.
Yeah.
Who am I thinking of? There was a Hall of Fame lineman, I think, that went in the later rounds of that draft. I don't know. But that 93 draft, Marvin Jones, the fourth overall pick that year. John Elway, 56 years old today, Hall of Famer in 2004, played in five Super Bowls. Won back-to-back titles on his way out the door January of 98 and 99. Won another title last year controlling personnel with the Denver Broncos. I think for a lot of people, John Elway is one of those Mount Rushmore quarterbacks. I don't know if he is for you. I think Marino's probably number one for you, Pete.
I love Marino.
Beyond that, though.
I think Elway would be in the conversation, to be on it. Okay. And you know what he's proven, too? What I love it? He showed that a lot of it's just football. I mean, he's become a really good personnel guy. And you know why? He's there first in the morning, and he works his butt off at it.
So Marino, Manning, Brady, Unitas, is that yours?
I mean, it's hard to leave Montana off of that.
Yeah.
But I always said Marino was better than Montana. If you had taken Montana and put him on Marino's offense, he wouldn't have been as good. And if you took Marino and put him in San Francisco, he would have won the rings anyway. So, yeah. Marino, Unitas. Hard to leave Otto Graham off. I never saw him play, but
I know.
Back
in, what was it, 9 or 10 straight championship games?
But the ones I saw play, Marino, and I saw Unitas at the tail end. He was a broken down old man by then. But Unitas, for sure. Brady's in the conversation, but I'll swear to this day that Manning was a better football player. and then, you know, Montana is in the Elway. Marino, to me, was better than him.
Yeah, I know. Marino's number one for you.
Yeah.
I know he's number one for you.
Love Marino.
I've had this conversation with you I don't know how many times. And finally here on this date in football history, Anthony Smith. I only mention him because he's got the same name as me. 49 years old, first-round pick of the Los Angeles Raiders in 91, 57.5 career sacks. And, again, we share a name.
I don't think you want to share a name with Anthony Smith. If I'm not, I think he's the one that got in trouble.
Did he?
Yeah.
We'll have to check that out.
Big time trouble.
We'll check that out here in just a moment. Thank you, Google. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda drive around the NFL. Brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Tony, the offensive lineman I think you were thinking of was Will Shields.
Oh, Shields,
yeah. Will Shields, yeah. 74th overall, third round to the Kansas City Chiefs. Jaguars defensive assistant Monty Kiffin and Broncos defensive coordinator Wade Phillips were named the two recipients of the 2016 Paul Dr. Z Zimmerman Award, chosen by the Pro Football Writers of America. The Dr. Z Award is given for a lifetime achievement as an assistant coach in the National Football League. Paul Zimmerman did cover the NFL for 29 years as Sports Illustrated's lead Pro Football Writer. Kiffin is entering his 50th year coaching football, 28 here in the NFL.
What kind of relationship did you have with Zimmerman, Pete? I know he's one of the legendary writers in the history of the NFL. You had to have known him.
Oh, I knew him. He was very, Let's just say he was the bully in the room. I mean, I don't want to, you know, rain on anybody's parade, but Dr. Z was very opinionated and would let you know. I mean, but the guy worked at the game. I mean, he loved the game and he worked at it. You got to give him a lot of credit. Was my relationship with him very good? No. I would not sit here and pretend that it was. And you know what? But you know, when people get sick or they die and everything else, that like when I die, everybody's going to say, God, he always walked around with a big smile on his face, you know? And we know that's not true.
Well, you always walked around with a smile on your face, but it's because you were making fun of everybody else in the room.
Correct.
We know why. We're just going to like leave that last part out.
By the way, former Oakland Raiders and Los Angeles Raiders defensive end Anthony Smith was convicted of murder of three men by a Southern California jury Thursday.
He is not my namesake. Get out of here, Anthony Smith.
And read a story about him, because I've read there's a weird story about him. He was strange.
Today, you call me Tony.
Yeah, today you're Tony. Not Anthony Smith anymore.
The attorney handling Johnny Manziel's domestic violence case, who expressed doubts about Manziel's ability to stay clean, is no longer associated with his case. Manziel's publicist confirmed the news Monday on Twitter that the defense attorney, Bob Hinton, has withdrawn his case. Hinton accidentally texted the Associated Press, "Heaven help us if one of the conditions is to pee in a bottle." And the question that I have, how do you accidentally text the Associated Press? Because we all have smartphones. You type in ASS if you're going to text the Associated Press. How do you do that?
Well, you've never mistakenly sent a text. Like I remember one time I was getting ready on a plane. I was getting ready to go, and I had just been texting with one of the radio stations, and I went to tell my wife I'm going, and I sent it to them. So you've done that before. That's probably what happened.
It happens.
Or they wanted it out.
Or yeah,
one or the other.
Or I mean, there's did the you see the
picture?
In there.
Did you see the recent picture of Johnny Manziel like by the pool?
No.
He looks like he weighs about 90 pounds. I mean, the guy's wasting away. It's terrible.
Sad story there. Longtime football coach James David Buddy Ryan passed away at 82 years young this morning. And his 46 defense helped the Chicago Bears destroy the Patriots 46-10 in Super Bowl 20. He was on the defensive staff for Super Bowl winning New York Jets in Super Bowl 3 in 1968. He was later the head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles. I grabbed some clips from the 30 for 30 on the 85 Chicago Bears. And in 1981, his players loved playing for him so much that they came together to write a letter expressing to the owner, George Halas, how much the players wanted to keep Buddy Ryan on as defensive coordinator during the head coaching change. The voices you'll hear here in this clip are Mike Singletary, Dan Hampton, Steve Mongo McMichael, and Gary Fensick.
It was important to our defense that we kept something in place. Buddy Ryan was the coordinator, and he knew how to put things together.
We knew that Buddy could not be fired, and so Gary Fensick and Alan Page got together and wrote a letter to George Halas.
Dear Mr. Halas, we, the undersigned members of the Bears defensive football team, are concerned about the
fate of Buddy Ryan and the other defensive coaches. We feel that if there is to be a change
in the coaching staff, Buddy Ryan and his staff should be
retained in order to avoid a setback for our defense. We feel that
we are a good defensive team, and that with their help,
we can be a great defensive team in the near future. Sincerely, the Chicago Bears defensive team.
So, all of a sudden, George Halas comes into practice. He had never been into practice before. And so he told our coaches, take a hike.
And he had that letter in his hand. And he was shaking the letter, and he was saying, never before have I been more proud than when I read this letter.
We are going to keep Buddy Ryan. You wrote the letter. You want it. You got it.
Did you ever see players in nowadays writing a letter to keep their coach?
That's such a unique situation where everything in the coaching staff is changing and the players are saying, we want this guy to still be around. Like, I can't imagine a scenario where the head coach changes and a coordinator stays. Like, that kind of thing, I can't see happening in today's NFL.
Well, because the guy wants his own staff. And
right.
He wouldn't. Nowadays, everybody's so thin-skinned, they think that there was going to be a guys backstabbing him all over.
And it may explain some of the animosity that Ditka and Buddy Ryan always had. You know, that Buddy stayed.
Right, he inherited.
Yeah. And as great as Buddy was, you can still understand the head coach being this isn't my guy.
And that perfectly leads into my next clip here is Mike Ditka talking about his relationship with Buddy Ryan.
What was your weekly interaction with him?
There was. I remember when I first got there, I think I went into one defensive meeting to see what the hell he was doing. I don't think he told me to leave, but I think that
Buddy would tell him to shag ass out of his meeting.
He would encourage him to say whatever you got to say and get on out of there.
I have to be honest with you. I'm not sure that I ever heard Buddy call him by his name. I think he's that guy. I never heard him say Mike Ditka.
True that he threw an eraser at you when you tried to come to the meeting?
That I don't remember, but he might have. He might have thrown a blackboard at me, so what? I'm still here. And probably a lot of that was resentment. Other than that, I don't think it was anything else. I think I'm a pretty likable guy. Even then, when I was a horse's ass, I thought I was a pretty likable guy.
That's all I have for the Honda drive around the NFL.
Don't we all? Even the greatest horse's asses think they're likable guys, right?
Dicky would have beat the daylights out of him if he threw an eraser at him, I think. He probably didn't see it. I mean, Dicky was... I wouldn't want to mess with Dicky.
Would you be surprised if Buddy Ryan threw an eraser at Mike Ditka, though?
No.
I mean, that story seems completely plausible.
Especially after he got the backing of the owner.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, once you get the backing of the owner, that's the problem with that.
And it's not just any owner. It's George freaking Halas.
Right.
I mean, it's one of the original guys from the NFL that stuck around. It's the reason the Bears are in Chicago. That's an unbelievable man to walk in. That's legendary stuff. With that guy walking in saying, you want him, you got him. Everybody else get out of here.
Right. It's why sometimes when a GM gets hired, he has to take on the coach. That's always a problem because he doesn't usually want that coach. He wants his own guy.
Yeah. And in Chicago, fortunately, the players wrote that letter. Who knows if 85 can even possibly happen. Even with all the talent on that defense, I don't think they're nearly as good without Buddy Ryan as the defensive coordinator.
I always thought it would be interesting to see what the players said in New York about Coughlin last year because they love the guy. And I thought he should have got another year. I think they should have told him, Tom, this is your last year, win or lose, and let him go out. And, I just don't think that was handled very well. I mean, the guy won 2 Super Bowls. He's a fantastic coach. Seriously, you look at it on the surface, you say you're replacing him with Ben McAdoo. I mean, on the surface, how foolish does that look? And, I had heard that, that job was going to go to Mike Smith. And then at the 11th hour, Eli went to bat for Ben McAdoo. And they didn't want to start all over again. And so I think that's why. And in fact, somebody in the league had told me that they were preparing the PR materials for Mike Smith. They were doing the background PR work. Yeah, that's how far that got. And it never got there. But Tom should have got another year. I truly believe that he deserved to have one more year. Just say, hey, look, I mean, if you're going to keep Jerry Reese, you're going to keep his entire staff, and you're going to fire Tom Coughlin? I mean, okay, Tom, you did it. It's your fault. Come on.
Yeah, it's a little bit of the scapegoat for what's happened in New York for the last couple of years there with Tom Coughlin. We'll get back into some Jaguars talk. Do want to talk about Blake Bortles, and as you said, Pete, pre-snap reads. I've heard you say it a couple times. You said it about a month ago when you joined Mike and I in studio for a couple minutes. You mentioned it earlier today, and I want to talk really about what exactly that means for Blake Bortles and for this offense in general as they try to take that next step to consistency on that side of the ball. And I do agree with you that those pre-snap reads are the next vital step for a guy like Blake Bortles in his career. We'll get into that as we continue along. It is a Tuesday edition of Jaguars Today. Pete Prisco alongside myself, Fat Tony, here on 1010XL.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Pete Prisco from CBS Sports. Fat Tony here with you on a Tuesday edition of Jaguars Today. Mike Dempsey's still on vacation. He'll be back on Thursday. John Osher will join me tomorrow. And Pete, we're going to get into Blake here in just a second.
Wait. Before you do that, Tyler, what did that guy just say when he called in? I want to hear this. This is great.
Oh, Texter, the 912. Wow, Pete used to crush the Jaguars. You sound like Frangie and the boys. What happened? You got put on the payroll? Hashtag steal the show.
Steal the show.
No, I'll kill everybody if I have to. Come on, you know me better than that. But there's reason for once in this city in a long time, for the first time in a long time, to be optimistic about this team. And I'm on record as saying they will win the division. I've said it on a couple programs on this station. I said it at CBS. They will win the division this year. Now, are they going to be a Super Bowl team? No. Forget that. But they will win the division with like a 9-7 record, maybe even 8-8, because I don't think it's a very good division. I think it's getting there, but it's not a good division. And they will make the playoffs. And then in 2017, they will be a legitimate Super Bowl contender. Legitimate Super Bowl contender before the season. So
I can't imagine what the offseason in this city would be like if they won the division this year, even if that's all they accomplished. Even if they lost that wild card game.
They'd be home.
Right. Even if they lost that game, I can't imagine the fire in this city going into the 2017 season if that was the case.
Now, there are things to worry about if you're a fan of the Jaguars out there, and I know there's a lot of them that listen. And look, bottom line is, can Gus get the job done? I mean, you don't know. I mean, there are moments where he's – I thought he's had moments where he's frozen up in games and not handled the situation very well. But he's also been coaching a team that didn't have any talent.
Sure.
So it's kind of unfair to see how he can go. Now, who knows? Can he handle it? We don't know that. Nobody knows that. If he doesn't win, he's gone. I think everybody in the city and I think everybody in the building, they know. If he's 6-10 or whatever, he's gone. So you don't know that. That's the unknown. You look at the positions of weakness. Okay, the offensive line, I know that people worry about the left side, but the offensive line in this, like I said earlier, the offensive line play in this league is horrible. Look at the two Super Bowl teams. They weren't very good on the offensive lines, and they both were there. Quarterback can compensate for that. That's where the next step is for him. Weakness on defense.
Youth.
That's it.
It's youth and a bunch of new guys.
That's the and Ken Fowler be Fowler.
Yeah.
And I was talking to somebody down there, and I said, you might get – you'll be if you get 10 sacks out of that guy, you'll be it'll be a miracle first year for him. And he says – the guy looked at me and he said, no, I think we'll get at least 10 out of him. And I went, whoa. I mean, that's how impressed they are. Without it's been running around in shorts and everything. But,
sure.
But that's an unknown. That is a major unknown. The kid from Maryland can rush the passer.
Yep.
That kid can rush the passer. He'll be on third down. He will be on the field with Fowler. They will be the two guys rushing the passer with Malik Jackson and maybe Marks or eventually Day, one of those guys. They'll be rushing the passer.
Yeah, they got options.
Linebackers are going to be solid. And Jack can be a playmaker. I think Ramsey's going to be a star. Ramsey will be a star. He's going to be the guy that they've never had in the secondary, the mouthy star. You know, they've had guys who've been mouthy, but they weren't stars. You know, Fernando Bryant was mouthy, but he wasn't a star.
He was just a good player.
Right. This guy will be a mouthy star. Sherman-esque. Better. He'll be better than Sherman. He'll be a better corner than Sherman. And then he'll be a better pure corner.
Okay.
Because Sherman can play in that system, and I think Sherman's good. But I don't know if you talk to the receivers and the corners in the league, and they go, how come Sherman never goes on the top receiver? He always stays on that side of the field. Yeah, and they said the same thing about Norman. And you know, Chris Harris, who I know very well, Chris Harris always said, where's Josh Norman going with the top receiver? He doesn't do it. And so that's always a question mark. Now, how they use Ramsey will be something to keep an eye on. It's true, though. If you don't play the top corner, can you beat Patrick Peterson goes with the top receiver all the time.
He does, but I think if you're looking at it from the other side, it should make it easier for an offense to dictate where they want to go with the ball. And it's still a guy taking away a side of the field because you don't put your top guy on that guy because there's no point in challenging him.
See, but I think Earl Thomas in that defense helps because he plays the middle so well that they can gamble and take chances.
They got so much talent.
He's the key. But again, could Patrick Peterson play in Seattle's scheme? Yes. Could Richard Sherman play in Arizona's scheme? That's the unknown. Now, I think he can. I don't think he'd be as good, but I think he can. Ramsey, I think, will be that type of corner, and he's mouthy. I like that. I like a guy who's mouthy. I think this team needs some swagger. They don't have any of that. And Miles Jack, by the way, you pop on his tape, there's some plays where he's hitting guys after the whistle. And I asked him about this. I said, there's a play, I think it was against when he played the slot corner. Who was that against? Colorado, I forget who he played. He played slot corner the whole game, mm-hmm. which was stupid. Jim Moore, nice move, by the way, taking your best player and making him a slot corner. And he hit this guy after the whistle. And he goes, oh, yeah, I'll do that once in a while. That's something that this team badly
needs. Yeah, it shows up on tape. And if you watch any of Miles' games, whether it was Virginia or Kansas State in the bowl game, there's going to be times where this is an echo of the whistle guy. And there's going to be plays where they don't have – what they've missed on defense here in Jacksonville is that violence. There hasn't been that attitude and that violence. They've had some guys that are good playmakers, right? Telvin Smith can make plays, but Telvin isn't a violent playmaker.
See, I think the thing that's been missing is speed.
A little bit of that. They got a bunch more this offseason.
They got a lot more now. And Gibson can play the middle of the field pretty well. He's a good player over there, too. Now, the corners are, you know, as a group, you look at them, there's still some unknown there. House had his moments where he looked good, then he has moments where he looked bad. Amukamara, you know, stopgap, you know, what Colvin's out for. So there's some uncertainty with the corner. You play the Packers open season, then you get Phillip Rivers. You better be good in the secondary. So there are some uncertainties there. But I just don't think the division's that great. You know, everybody goes, Texans. Really? With you got a new quarterback who you saw glimpses of him. Would you rather be the Texans with Osweiler or the Jaguars with Bortles?
I'd rather be the Jaguars with Bortles, but talking specifically about the AFC South, I think the unit that is most prepared to dictate to an opponent right now is that Houston defense. And I think the question for Jaguars fans and really this Jaguars team going into the season, there's obviously a bunch of questions, the youth that they have on the defensive side of the ball and how that's all going to come together. But I think it's easier to put the pieces together on defense and let them wreck it.
But, Tony, everybody talks about that defense, okay? And we'll go through that defense.
Houston, we're talking about now.
J.J. Watt is a beast.
Transcendent.
The best player
probably
at any position in the league. Clowney has injury history. Now, he flashed at times last year, but there's injury history. He hadn't been what they thought he would be. Wilfork's 142 years old, and all he does is clog things up, and he wasn't even that good at that last year.
No, he wasn't.
They lose Crick, so they got an open position up front. They're not very good up front other than Watt, okay? They're not. They're okay. They're serviceable. J.J. Watt's phenomenal. The other guys are serviceable. Clowney, now Merciless had a good year last year. Played better, but he had been a little bit of an unknown. I think McKinney in the middle is really going to be a good player. Cushing, to me, is okay. Solid. Now the corners, I think Kevin Johnson down the road is going to be really good. Joseph had a great year last year. And then Jackson. They're good at the corners. The safeties are average as average can be. Average. Now they drafted one. We'll see what he does. But the averages could be. So there's still a lot of uncertainty on, it's the J.J. Watt defense. That's what it is.
No, it's the J.J. Watt defense, and I don't disagree with that, but I think it's also been, if you're looking at the offense versus defensive sides of the ball in the division, they're the unit that you
feel
like,
best.
You know, like, this is what they're going to be. Now, they may not be as good as they were last year, especially for that run after that Miami game that they went on, which was just ridiculous, basically, for the second half of the season. But the question becomes for the Jaguars, where the offense looks like it's going to be the stronger unit based on what we saw out of him last year in 2015. We've been talking about that next step for Blake Bortles, and I think it speaks directly to the next step for this offense, which is being able to consistently dictate how a football game is going to go. And that's something that they never really effectively did last year. It was always the offense was reacting to whatever was happening on the field, and in part that's because the defense was as bad as it was last year. But they never were able to calm down and control a game. And I think we talk about the pre-snap reads for Blake Bortles. That's where that becomes important. Because if he's able to do that, then there's more of those positive plays where they're gaining 7, 8, 9 yards instead of being behind the chains as much as they were last year and able to dictate to opposing defenses how this game is going to go.
Well, that, but also you mentioned the defense. I mean, it's hard to play quarterback in the National Football League with a bad, bad, bad defense. It really is. And in fact, I went around talking to some of the better quarterbacks in the league last year, and a guy like Aaron Rodgers, mm-hmm. about how much different it would be. And he wasn't going to diss his own defense, but how much different it would be to be able to play with Seattle's defense. When you can play quarterback with Seattle's defense, and Russell Wilson gets propped up by a lot of people, and I'm probably the one guy who picks him apart more than anybody, it's easy to play quarterback when you have a great, great defense. I use Russell Wilson's name because I come back to Bortles with what I was talking about pre-snap reads. Russell Wilson is outstanding outside the pocket. I think Blake Bortles is outstanding outside the pocket. He keeps his head up. He makes throws down the field. But that stuff.
That's what they were last year.
That's
break it down and Blake makes a play down the field.
And that's what Seattle was a lot last year. But that stuff goes away as much. You get older. The game is meant to be played. Put your foot in the ground. Go through your progressions. Make your reads. Get the ball out. Don't move off of there. I'll give you an example. Russell Wilson takes a snap, steps into the pocket, read one, not open, doesn't come back to read two, who is open fast enough, the pocket's pretty clean, gets outside, scrambles to his right, keeps his head up, makes a dart down the field for a 45-yard play. Everybody goes, oh my God, great play. No, negative play. Didn't make the play the way it was supposed to be made. Eventually, you have to make the play the way it's supposed to be played. That's the next step for Blake Bortles. In the concepts of the offense, read one, read two, read three, stay there, make a play. Now, if you get to read one, read two, and the pressure's coming, you get outside and you make a play, then that's fine. But you have to be able to stay there, make your pre-snap reads, know where you're going with the ball, and get the ball out.
And the great ones in the league, when we talk about pre-snap reads, are the guys who step to the line and know, whatever my read was on this play, this is where the ball needs to go.
Manning.
Yeah, I mean, it's stepping up and saying this is where that play needs to go. That's what the defense is dictating based on what I'm seeing. And he just He hasn't done a whole lot of that, and honestly, it's led to, I think, a bunch of the turnovers that we've seen from Blake, just not seeing it beforehand and then being tricked by what happens after the snap.
Well, in the Atlanta game, we always go back to that, when he threw, he had one-on-one on the right side with Allen Robinson, your best receiver. You got to go to that, whether the play was called or whatever you called, you got to go to that
was,
side.
Yeah.
He threw that, you know, pass that was picked off the other way. You can't do that, and that's the next step for him. I think he's smart enough. I think he works at it. I think he'll get to it. But again, don't necessarily take away the other stuff, because there's going to be times when it breaks down and you want him to keep it. He does a great job of keeping his head up. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger and Aaron Rodgers make a lot of plays when they get moving in, but a lot of times they try and stay there as much as they can, and then they move and they move to throw. He moves to throw, which is a good thing, but eventually he's got to get better at coming to the line of scrimmage, identifying this is coming here, this is coming here, I'm going to have this, I'm going to have that, and in the concepts of the offense, get the ball out on time. And I think he'll get to that. That's the next step for him.
Yeah, and then the question becomes, is he going to do it?
Right? He'll do it.
And for me, since Blake Bortles has gotten here to Jacksonville, I've been saying this since I met him, since I had the opportunity to talk to him during that first offseason. The only thing that's going to get in the way of Blake Bortles is whatever his limitations are. Like, he's not going to get in his own way. Whatever he can get out of it, he's going to get out of it, which makes me confident as someone who covers his team that when we talk about these pre-snap reads, I think he's capable of that, and I think he's mentally capable of that, so I think it's going to come. And I think it could come early in this season for this Jaguars offense.
People always get mad at me because I always say the game is meant to be played in the pocket, and it is. For all the RG3s and Mike Vicks and guys who come over, you know, Steve Young won a Super Bowl when he learned to play the game better from the pocket. Phil Sims always says this, you don't get faster as you get older. And eventually you slow down, and those plays you get away from.
It's not physical. You can get fast in your head.
And that's what you have to do. You have to get faster in your head. You're one step ahead of the defense in your head. You're going to have a lot of success playing the position. And I think Blake can get to that, but he has to get there. They got to run the ball better. I mean, there's no doubt. You throw to score, though, you run to win. And by that, I mean, if you got a lead, you got to be able to run the football. You got to be able to line up and take off 7 minutes, 6 minutes, you know, burn that clock, drive down the field. Don't build it around the running game like a certain team in Tennessee is going to do, but you run the ball, you throw it or score, and you run the win. That's the formula.
You can make fun of the Titans all you want in this program. Fans love it. They
Malarkey still lives in town here. He still has a house in here. He's probably listening because I kill him enough. But
Mike.
You have Marcus Mariota, right, in Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to build around him. And what do? You decide you're going to fortify your offensive line and get DeMarco Murray and draft Derrick Henry. So what are you going to do? You're going to run the ball.
Power run.
And they're going to say you're going to take the pressure off the quarterback. Now you're taking the focus away from the focus has to be on the quarterback to win in this league.
And it is going to be in Jacksonville. There's no doubt about it. They're going to be a team that the passing game is what's going to be the engine for this offense, and hopefully, like you said, they can run when they need to, which is not something they were able to do last year at all effectively.
But
so hopefully that
run
changes.
Run off your spread, Tony. I mean, this is another pet peeve of mine too. You saw it in the play in London. When you get the ball on the goal line, you don't have to bunch up and bring everybody in. If you get all the way down there spreading the ball out, then don't bunch it up. Just keep it spread out and run that way if you want to. And teams do. Every team in the league does it. I mean, it's a curse. Except for the Patriots, they won't do it.
Patriots and oftentimes the Packers, when they get to that part of the field, they leave the game in their quarterback's hands.
Right.
Essentially, which
That's
is what you should do.
That's what this team needs to get to.
Yeah, and hopefully they do here in 2016. We got the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight getting your answers to the question today. In honor of the passing of Buddy Ryan, who created the 46 defense with the 85 Bears, who is the greatest defensive coordinator in NFL history? We'll get to some of your questions here in just a moment. Pete Prisco, Fat Tony here with you on a Tuesday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
I walked out my first practice with the Bears. I don't know who Buddy Ryan is. This little short, fat guy walks up to me. Says, well, 76, you've been working out? Because I'm going to work your butt off today. I said, yeah, coach, I've got this big black Great Dane. He loves to get me jogging. I've been running. I'm in shape. He said, oh, yeah, we'll find out. After wind sprints, I'm bent over. I hear that smart ass walk up behind me. You know what he says? Shoot, 76, we should have signed the freaking dog.
Good stuff there. As again, we look back on the life and career of Buddy Ryan passing away today at the age of 82. Should have signed the dog. I doubt the language was that clean.
No, Mongo was crazy.
Yeah, I doubt the language was that clean when Buddy Ryan actually told him that they should have signed the dog. But a bunch of those stories with the 85 Bears, honestly, I don't think the 85 Bears could exist in today's NFL. I think
not
they would have been
social media and everything the
yeah,
way it is.
They would have been suspended out of the league. There would be players that just weren't going to finish the season because of things that were happening.
Well, McMahon mooned everybody at the Super Bowl. Remember
yep.
when the helicopter?
Oh yeah.
I mean, and was told not to wear his headband and wore it anyways. I mean, the ruse headband that the league told him not to wear, he wore it. I mean, they were defiant all the way around. It was a crazy group. I mean, talented but crazy group.
Yeah, the stories that, you know, I wasn't really watching the 85 Bears. I was a tyke at the time, but the stories, you know, the 30 for 30s and all the things that have been done about that Bears team, and you watch it, you're like, whoa. Like, compared to today's NFL environment, like, I wonder if Roger Goodell watches it, because they are just this beloved thing in the history of the NFL, is the 85 Bears. They are their own thing, and they kind of fit in this specific spot in the NFL lore. And I wonder if Goodell watches it and sees all it and is like, oh, like if it just drives him crazy that it even existed at any time in the
but
NFL.
Even since the Jaguars
the personality
came in,
is so
but
good.
The Jaguars came into the league, think about how much it's changed. Like, I mean, Vinnie Clark threatened to blow up my car on the practice field. Could you imagine if that happened today? Screamed it out. Screamed it out loud. That goes viral today.
Yeah.
I mean, the equipment room opened up and about 15 guys came at me, you know, screaming at me like they were going to get me. And there were people filmed it and it never made the news. I mean, nowadays that's everywhere in 5 seconds.
Yeah.
It's just changed the way and that's why I think a lot of players are guarded now, really guarded. I mean, I think social media has, you know, changed the landscape a little bit because everybody's, you know, now a media member, and so they're scared of that, and I get it, but it's kind of taking away the personality a little bit of the player.
Yeah, which hurts it a little bit. Obviously, the NFL is as big as it's ever been right now, but it kind of hurts that side of it where it makes stories about Buddy Ryan and the 85 Bears where it just couldn't exist in today's NFL where you're like, wow. You know, like, it used to be this way. Like, guys
well,
used to
Sherman.
Talk this way.
Well, like, Richard Sherman did his rant, remember?
Oh,
and,
it was,
and he got killed for it.
It was
everywhere.
Awesome.
And it was great to watch. It was great theater. It was a guy being, you know, after a game, being who he is, and then he got ripped for it and shredded for it everywhere. See, none of that stuff ever bothered me.
No.
Ever.
No, and it didn't bother me. Like, the Sherman thing, I had friends that were like, what a clown. I was like, this is the best. Like, that a guy in the NFL, as someone who talks to players, getting somebody to do that is the absolute best, to just be themselves, that big personality on the screen. That's, if the NFL is missing anything that it used to have, that's it.
I'm better at life than you.
Yeah, that kind of guy. And I think it helps the NFL to have those personalities. Richard Sherman's a brand.
He's smart.
Because of that kind
of
thing.
He got an A+ in marketing. I mean, the guy marketed himself into people know who he is.
Yeah.
Even though he blocked me on Twitter.
I mean, I'm sure.
How do you deserve that? He talks
Patrick Peterson trash, I'm sure.
Yeah, and you know what I do? I take screenshots of him holding and stuff and put them on there so he blocked me. And Robert Klemko was talking to him one day, and we were in the press box, and he goes, hey, Pete Prisco's next to me, and he gave him boop, boop, Prisco. He gave me one of those. So, oh, well.
Huh. It is what it is.
I'm not well liked in Seattle, by the way.
I know Cliff Averill was in. I can't imagine why that would be.
Cliff Averill was in here last week. I wish I would have come in and said hello to Cliff, because Cliff's actually a really nice guy. Cliff used to work out at the Hit Center when I was over there, and he's a heck of a guy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, with the way that you talk about Russell Wilson and Richard Sherman, and maybe he might be the second
Marshawn
best.
Lynch.
Third best corner in the league.
Marshawn Lynch.
I know you love teams that love to run the ball.
No, I love guys that don't talk either.
Yeah.
Brilliant, Marshawn. Although, actually, he parlayed that into some other stuff, too.
He did, too. Like, his silence actually, I mean, the Skittles thing came because he eats Skittles, but
right.
You see him in ads now. It's
right.
Like,
right.
What is happening?
He marketed himself pretty well, too.
Yeah, he did a good job. Those guys in Seattle have done a good job of that. And it's one of the few teams in the league where you're like, oh, personality. Like, Seattle has a personality. There's something to that Seahawks team. I don't know how much you can say that about any other team in the league. Brady is Brady. And the way he's carried himself on and off the field, the antics with him on the field are, I hate Brady in a lot of ways, but I love that aspect of it where he is the guy who's going to fist pump and scream. Like, I do like that, and I wish there was more of that in the NFL where guys were willing to show that kind of emotion. It's just not in the game anymore.
And then you got Gronk.
Oh, yeah.
He's a personality of, Gronk fears no one. I always say, give me 22 Gronk, well, 21 Gronks and a quarterback, and I'll take my chances.
Holy
cow. Yeah. I mean, the guy's a beast. I mean, he's a phenomenal football player. But, you know, personality's good on a team to some degree. You can't let it get out of control. It has to be in a control. Like, the Bengals allow the personality to get out of control.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, with Pac-Man and Perfect and everything. And those stories aren't just on the field either. I mean, there's stories where, you know, Pac-Man will yell at Marvin Lewis and, you know, and then it's forgotten, but you gotta have, you can't allow that to happen. You gotta have some kind of discipline along the way.
And I guess, for the Jaguars, it feels like they're getting an influx of that kind of personality with guys like Jalen Ramsey we mentioned earlier.
Yeah, Jalen, by the way, how's your knee? I mean, seriously, I like a guy with an edge, but they're just asking you a question about your knee.
I'm good. Next question.
Well, okay. How good? Are you going to be ready for camp?
I'll be fine.
Okay.
Next question. Well, by the way, I just want to say it right here.
You're going to get 20 questions on it.
I'm not taking any more questions about my knee. I'm fine. I'm going to be ready for camp. That's the end of it.
See, I think he's already working on his persona. Now, I know it was that way at Florida State. He had a little bit of, but he's already smart. This is a smart kid. He's working on corner Jalen Ramsey and the persona, like Richard Sherman did.
Mm-hmm.
And Deion Sanders did. And if you go back in history, you know, the corners, they always have a little bit of a, and wide receivers and corners always have that diva mentality. I'm not saying he's a diva. If he is, I applaud you, Jalen, because you're smart. Because your lifespan in the NFL is only so many years. Anybody who can work marketing themselves into something on the side while they're still working and becoming good football players, I applaud you for that. That's marketing 101. Deion Sanders did it great. Richard Sherman did it well. I think Jalen Ramsey's working on that already because he can't really get that mad. He's supposedly a really good kid. He can't really get that mad when people ask him about his knee.
No. No. I mean, it's the obvious question right now with Jalen Ramsey, and it's going to be asked until it's answered on the field. That's just the way the NFL works. Before we get out of here, I do want to take a brief look at the Tom Bush Family Dealerships fan feedback question of the day. We asked, in honor of the passing of Buddy Ryan at the age of 82 today, who is the greatest defensive coordinator in NFL history?
Belichick's the greatest, by the way.
Some of the answers we got, Bud Carson with the Steelers in the 70s. We got Buddy Ryan, Dick LeBeau, Bill Belichick, Dom Capers. Got to mention Tom Landry, who created the 4-3 defense there with the New York Giants. Put Sam Huff, who was a defensive lineman, actually into that middle linebacker spot. It's the first time that had been done in the National Football League. So the names that you would expect to be out there, Jack Del Rio, Wade Phillips, a couple of the other guys that got mentioned a handful of times. I think it's tough to say who is the best. I think with the way the game works today, that Belichick has been able to stay ahead of it as well as he has is pretty remarkable. That it is year to year, he's still finding a way. Like when I was doing the research this weekend on the defensive rankings and teams moving up 6 points, the Patriots are basically 19, 20 points a game for the past decade. Like, that's who they are. And it doesn't matter what personnel they've had on the field, they've been that way. They just stay right at that kind of number, and it speaks to the brilliance of a guy like Bill Belichick.
And when he was with Parcells, his Giants defenses were great, too. I mean, the guy's a brilliant mind. Bill Arnsberg is another name. Great defensive coordinator came up, you know, when he was with the 53 defense down in Miami with Bob Matheson and those guys. So there's a lot of great defensive coach. But Belichick, to me, the guy's a brilliant, brilliant defensive mind. And, you know, Matt Patricia's taken over running the defense there. But you always, every time you see a team play, you always, and you kind of look like Matt Patricia, by the way. But every time you see a team play, you go, you know what? You see the Patriots play, you go, boy, that just smells of Belichick.
Yeah.
Brilliance. I mean, the guy's brilliant.
No, he's a great
football
mind. He's a
curmudgeon, but he's brilliant.
Yeah, one of the best football minds of all time. Is the 85 Bears the best defense?
To me it is.
Okay.
To me, it's the best. You know, now, some, you know, like one year the Steelers defense, you know, they had, I think they had like six shutouts one year. And they were, but they had.
What was that, 76?
The year the quarterback got hurt. What year was that? When Bradshaw went down, they had like banged up or whatever, and they had the defense carrying them. They had, I think it was six. Man, but look at all the Hall of Famers they had on that defense. I could have coached that defense. I mean, you're talking about Joe Green and Elsie Greenwood and Jack Ham and Jack Lambert and Mel Blunt. I mean, it was a dominant, dominant defense. So, yeah, but the Bears defense, the way they did it, that for that 1 year, in 2 years actually, because 86 they were really good too.
Mm-hmm.
They were, you know, the best scoring defense of all time was in a 16-game season is the Ravens.
Yeah.
And they were a darn good defense.
And had nothing on offense.
But here's
nothing.
But here's the flaw in that. Jimmy Smith went for 225 or whatever and three touchdowns against that defense.
Yes, he did.
I don't think anybody went for 225 and three touchdowns against the Bears.
No, and I can, we did a couple months ago, Mike and I did a top five where we were like top five individual performances in a game by a Jaguar in history, and it's what Jimmy did in that game. Maybe,
was that number one?
It may be the best single game performance ever.
Considering who it came against.
Yeah.
Now, Fred's game against Pittsburgh at Three Rivers is one of those.
Unreal,
too.
Yeah.
I mean, those, and I was there for both of those, but those are two of the, to me, those are two of the, they're probably 1-2. They got to be 1-2.
Yeah. They were 1-2 on my list.
Yeah.
They were 1-2 on my list. So it was fun today, Pete.
Yeah, it was fun.
Despite,
I miss radio.
I know you do, and I miss doing radio with you.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
Back
some
in
other,
the day.
At some other lifetime in some other place.
Yeah.
And then Monday nights when I get to infuriate Baselli.
Yes.
Skinny Baselli now.
That's all you got to do.
I guess he's down 70 pounds, huh?
Just mention the Pro Football Focus and...
Oh, kidding me? He can mention anything. He
watch comes him
in,
go.
If there's a loss on Sunday and he flies home, he's like a player. He doesn't let it go. Let it go. Let it go, Tony. You don't play anymore.
Has Baselli made any guarantees yet?
No. There's still
a
Well,
I'm making a guarantee. The Jaguars are going to win the division.
I was about to say, Pete's saying they're winning the AFC South this year. What do you got coming up? I know you got vacation.
I do have vacation. I'm heading to Aruba. I can't wait. And then I come back, and next thing you know, it's training camp.
Try to figure out the training camp itinerary.
Yeah, well, I know I'm going to Oakland because I got to do something with Derek Carr and Amari Cooper. Because I'm doing something on young pass-catching combos, and I've already talked to Robinson and Bortles, and I went to Tampa two weeks ago, and talked to Jameis Winston and Mike Evans, and how you bond with your number one receiver and build that rapport. So I'm going to do Carr and Cooper, and then go to Houston to do Osweiler and Hopkins, a little different dynamic, and then
sure.
One other. I haven't figured it out yet who the other one will be.
Well, hopefully we get a chance to get you on again before the season gets started, training camp at some point in time, get a chance to get you in studio with Mike and I. It's we get ready for a season where you think the Jags are going to win the division title. That's Pete Prisco. So for Pete, for myself, Fat Tony, for Mike Dempsey on vacation, for Tyler Devitt, and in honor of Buddy passing away today at the age of 82. Buddy Ryan passing away, the legendary creator of the 46 defense. That'll do it for us here on a Tuesday edition of Jaguars Today. Midday Chalk coming up next here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
That's great job.
You guys have a good day. Peace.